Hello and welcome to the Stop the Sales Drop podcast. I'm Eric Grubers, CEO of Personal ABM and Stop the Sales Drop. You can see all of our past podcasts at stopthesalesdrop.com and also register for our Friday reboot series, where we will have a panel on rebooting the content experience. And talking about content, my guest expert is the director of marketing at Path Factory, Cassandra Jowett. Did I say your name right?
It's Jowett, but it's commonly mispronounced Jowett. Yeah.
Cassandra, welcome to our podcast and thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into our conversation and how we need to shift content, why don't you give our listeners a background of yourself and on Path Factory?
Sure, happy to. So I've been in marketing for over a decade now, and I sort of fell into it like a lot of people just fall into marketing randomly. I came through journalism, so naturally the world of content marketing was really well suited to my skill set and my interests. I could write and interview experts and distill complex information into easy to understand content assets for people. So just sort of found my way into content marketing that way by accident. And then started my career just not knowing what I'm doing, working at a very small startup and trying to figure out, you know, how to build an audience through content, how to build a business through content, and eventually made my way into the MarTech space, working at a company called Influitive, and spent about 4 years there leading content marketing, and then came over to Path Factory, where I started again leading the content marketing function, but increasingly started taking on more responsibilities around demand gen, customer marketing. And so now I'm leading the brand and demand team here at Path Factory. And if you're not familiar with what we are, basically we make it a lot more easy and interesting to deliver your content to your prospects. We're a B2B intelligent content platform that is primarily used by enterprise and mid-market marketers to deliver content to their audiences, but also most importantly, collect a whole new class of data on the other side of that. So understanding how people are engaging with your content and campaigns on any channel. And so you can make decisions not only about what to market and where, but also use that data in really fun, interesting ways in your marketing automation platform and other areas to create a more personalized, relevant experience for your buyers.
And talking about content consumption, I saw that Path Factory recently did a study on how content consumption changed in 2020. Can you talk about where the trends are and what you think it means for 2021?
Certainly. So we were really curious to see how the, you know, initial COVID-19 lockdowns would affect B2B content consumption when they happened in March. I think there was a lot of wild speculation about how it would impact business overall. And of course, you know, the front end of a lot of businesses is their digital marketing and content strategy. So we thought that it might be interesting to take a look at the data. And we had our data scientists sort of parse through all of the content engagement data across our customer base, which again is primarily, you know, larger B2B companies. And the findings were interesting. You know, I think there were some people who maybe would have guessed that content consumption would have gone way down. Maybe others would say, oh, it's gone way up. And of course, the reality is always a little bit somewhere in the middle on both sides. So digital content engagement definitely did increase significantly after the lockdowns first started in March. Asset views overall were up by about 40%, which is pretty significant. And, you know, just goes to show that when marketers basically have one choice in terms of how to reach their buyers, which is through digital marketing, they're going to market more and also people are going to find that information. You know, it wasn't always a good news story though. So the behavior did change dramatically in other ways too. So there were more sessions, more asset views, all of those good things. But the sessions were definitely shorter. So the idea that, you know, as we're dealing with not just, you know, the pandemic and all the news around that, You know, we're also getting marketed to a lot more on every single digital marketing channel. And so our buyers' attention spans actually went down, but they were coming back more often. So they were sort of having like shorter, more frequent engagement with content. And the median time between visits was actually 50% shorter than the period before the lockdowns began. And so we thought that was really interesting. And if there's sort of like one other big positive takeaway, it's that the difference between the really engaged buyers and, you know, the just the curious folks became much more evident in this period as well. So the increase in total content engagement was actually 7 times higher for people who consumed more than one asset in a session than those who didn't. So, you know, those really, really engaged folks became even more engaged because if that was sort of the one method that they had to figure out if they had to make a buying decision for their company. And probably the stakes were even much higher at that time because, you know, you're trying to figure out how do I solve all these problems in the midst of a pandemic and you have unique challenges around, you know, IT and employees working from home and reaching customers or serving customers in this new context. And so for the folks who really had a challenge to solve, that content engagement went way, way up. So those are just some of the sort of high level findings. I was really, you know, as a marketer, I was really interested to see this. We also covered, you know, what are some of the most viewed content asset types during the pandemic and did that change? And we definitely found that video, of course, videos and webinars became way more popular because it was easy to just sort of like pump those out fairly quickly as opposed to, you know, longer form written content. But people did still go for, you know, the ebooks, the reports, and those sorts of things because sometimes they would offer that deep dive on a topic that, you know, they're really trying to find a solution for. So it was kind of interesting to see how those different content types, you know, increased or decreased depending on what it was. And of course, like those are just the overall findings. Everyone's business is going to be a little bit different. So it's, I always sort of want to put a bit of an asterisk and say, you know, that stuff doesn't necessarily apply to every single company. And I don't necessarily encourage everyone to go out and like only produce videos and webinars and no other forms of content because that's what people were consuming with this change. But it's just sort of an interesting insight into, you know, some of the changes that happened at the beginning of the pandemic this year. And I'm hoping that we can do another one of these reports to kind of compare, you know, that first few months of the pandemic with, you know, the rest of, you know, the new reality, how we're all living now, where everything is still pretty digital, but we're out of that emergency hair on fire phase.
Based on the trends that you saw, what are some of the shifts that we should be making when it comes to content this year or this coming year? Yeah. Depending on when people listen to this.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've always advocated for, not always, but in the last few years, I've advocated for a lot, and I think we're really evident in this report, were, you know, those really long, lengthy ebooks and assets, like, well, they can be good. I think we need to shorten them a little bit to match people's attention spans and maybe find smarter ways to deliver that content to them through like a re-engagement campaign. Hey, you read chapter one of this ebook, come back and read chapter two. That is something to consider because, you know, as much as people do enjoy those pieces of content, they don't always spend enough time with them to actually read the whole thing. And that's the biggest thing is like, yes, someone might download it or they might click on it, but are they actually reading the majority of the content? And if not, is there a better way to package that up in a way that makes it a bit more accessible? And, you know, that might be repurposing it into a lot of different formats like webinars and videos. But I think often the written content is still good. It's not something wrong with, you know, writing content down. It's more around the sheer length and how much time we expect people to spend with that in a single session, but they might come back again and again. And so, you know, that was one change that my team made in our marketing last year, even before the pandemic. And we've seen some really great results with that. And so I always like to recommend that one. And then, you know, I think if there's one thing to be learned overall in terms of, you know, a practice that you can implement is to test smaller, shorter forms of content that are a bit easier to produce, especially when you're dealing with new topics that you're not sure how your audience is going to respond to. You know, it can be tough to know. And I, you know, I was speaking to so many marketers at the start of the pandemic who were saying, oh, I don't know if I'm even allowed to say the words COVID-19 or pandemic in my marketing, even though my business really supports people through this challenge. And so, you know, I think the folks who, you know, threw out some test assets to see how they would perform, and then once they saw a positive result of that, doubled down on the topic and invested more. And we did see, like, we could see these topics in our customers' content library, where any topics that had to do with COVID-19 or related keywords had the highest engagement time out of like any other keyword. So you know, at that time, people were so hungry for real solutions to the problems they were having as a result of the pandemic. And so of course people are going to spend more time with that, but you don't really know that until you do some testing. So, you know, one of our customers, Alacadia, which just happens to be another MarTech vendor, but you don't have to be to do this kind of stuff. They threw out a few early blog posts just to sort of test things out and see how their audience would react. They got the validation that they needed from the content engagement data and kind of gave them permission to move forward with a larger content strategy on some of these topics so that they could, you know, they could really give their audience what they needed and feel comfortable just from a risk perspective that they weren't gonna, you know, get a lot of blowback because they weren't covering the topic properly or whatever it is.
Ooh, Alacadia was part of our Reboot Friday panels. Jocelyn Brown, the SVP of Customers and Revenue, was on our panel last week on improving or rebooting the customer experience. And Julia, their CMO, is going to be on an upcoming marketing planning and performance panel next year.
That's awesome. They're really smart folks over there. And you know, the work they do, not just in marketing, but across the customer experience, is really great. And they really punch above their weight in terms of, you know, the vision that they bring and how they deliver on that in their marketing and for their customers as well. I tuned into their holiday roast last week, and it was really, really fun. So I loved seeing all the creativity that their team put into that.
Cool. Now, talking about customer experience, where does friction lie in the buying journey? And mm-hmm. what are some of the content shifts that we need to make to remove that friction?
Yeah, I mean, friction, I think, is a huge problem right now, especially when everything is all digital. But even before that, it was a challenge as well. You know, I think a lot of the analysts are covering this topic and trying to find ways that we can better enable our buyers. And so, you know, number one, friction exists where you're putting a form in front of everything, where you're gating everything, where you're making people take the same actions over and over again. And so those are really simple things that can definitely be solved just through some smarter automation. So making it easy, if you're sending an email to someone, make it one click register instead of having them fill out the form again, because you already know who they are. You know, that's a change that our team made, for example, to reduce friction. But even just the idea of forms, I've always been a very strong advocate against the use of forms. And, you know, I think as a content marketer at heart, it's because it puts a friction point in between, you know, the audience and the content. And while I understand that for a long time, that was the best way for marketers to understand how their content was performing, it's not necessarily true anymore. And also, people are more reluctant than ever to give up their precious contact details. So, you know, marketers win when your company can sell whatever it is you're selling. And so the more educated your buyers are on that, the more your team is winning. And there are ways to, you know, gate more smartly. I used to be super hardcore against any forms at all, but I've come around a little bit to the idea of, you know, smarter engagement-based gating, for example, where you give people a certain amount of time with the content before you throw up a form, or you let them access 3 or 5 assets before you put up a form, to sort of give before you get, so to speak. But there are lots of other ways that friction is introduced in the buying journey. You know, not personalizing the journey at all. If you're just sending everyone the same emails and not segmenting based on their past engagement with you, not just their demographics or psychographics or technographics, whatever, you know, things you're using to figure out who that person is, but their actual past behavior with you. What content have they consumed in the past? What campaigns have they engaged with? If they're a customer already, what products do they have and not have? All of those things, by not taking that into consideration when you're sending them new content and campaigns, can introduce a ton of friction and basically make it feel like they are feeling around in the dark. You know, most companies have so much content now, you really have to narrow in and provide a bit of a journey for them that is customized, not just one size fits all. So when marketers are just trying to blast things out there and get everyone to look at one thing, that's not a very good experience. And the last thing I think is a bit more strategic. Like, do you actually have the content that will allow your buyers and customers to pull themselves through to that next stage of the buying journey? I think as marketers, we're very used to pushing things at people. And of course, you need to deliver content in a way that actually reaches people, but they should be able to continue pulling themselves through the buying journey when they're in the mood to do that. And that's not necessarily going to be on your time frame of, you know, another drip email every other week or whatever it is. They might want to go really deep on a topic one day, drop it for a month, and then come back, and they're going to have missed all those things. So making sure that the content assets are there and available in front of them at the time that they're engaging and ready to, you know, binge on that content, get educated, and not have to search around for it in like a huge resource center or something, but, you know, giving them the next step at every point so they can keep pulling themselves through and they don't have to wait for that next email from you or that next visit to the website and digging through all the content that you have. So those are just a few things. I could go on about friction for probably another 2 hours. So I will leave it there for the sake of your audience. And I know you have other topics that you want to cover as well. So those are just like my top three, I think.
What is the content that we need for buyers to pull themselves through?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about what marketers are really great at, it's often those amazing like top of funnel brand campaigns. And I know whenever I've walked into a new company, it's very common for them to have all of these great brand pieces at the top to really get buyers excited about the ideas that, you know, the company holds dear, which, you know, are often directed a bit from maybe the executive team or some sort of strategic position. And, you know, that content is great. There's nothing wrong with it. But where things start to fall apart and where you see people falling out of your funnel is if you don't have and you haven't thought through the next step and the next step and the next step after that to go all the way down to closed one. And even once they become a customer, where do they go from there? So I like to do a bit of a content audit and map where I literally map out rough buying journey stages and different personas and make sure that for each major entry point for our brand, there is a place for them to kind of ladder down to actually becoming a customer one day. And if that doesn't exist, then that kind of points me in the direction of here's where I need to invest my content resources in terms of production, or here's where I need to invest my demand gen budget in terms of delivering that content in new places to ensure that people are getting it. Whether it's, you know, through our own marketing database or in other channels like ads and content syndication and co-marketing with partners and that sort of thing. So that's part of it, is just like making sure that the building blocks are there. But also it's the experience that they have when they're engaging with the content. Is it a dead end, or does it allow them to take the next step without thinking about it too much? So does it say you should check this out next? And, you know, of course, as Path Factory, we have solutions for that, but I won't get into detail. Like, you can even just, if you're writing a blog post, say, you know, this is the next best thing that you can read. And it won't be super personalized, but at least it's a next step that we can take. And I think that as marketers, we often just like throw up the content or get it out there. And we don't think a lot about what the next step is that someone might take after that. And so actually sitting down as a team and considering those options, where do we go from here? What is the sort of choose your own adventure next step that a buyer might take? And, you know, sometimes you just start with one simple path, and that's enough to get people going. And it's not going to serve every buyer in every situation, but at least it's possible to get from the top of the funnel to close one some way, instead of, you know, these gaping holes in the buyer's journey. And then as you become more sophisticated, you can start building that out more for different segments, different verticals, different company types or sizes or whatever it is, however you're breaking up your ABM strategy or, you know, the different personas and products that you're selling to, you know, you can get more complex from there. And it can be overwhelming, which is why I say just start with one path and make sure there's sort of, if you think about like safe harbor from all this lava, you have all these little like jumping points that you can get through, and your buyer isn't going to just like fall down into the lava halfway through the buyer's journey. They're going to be able to jump to the next rock and then the next one and the next one. And you've laid that out for them in a really clear way. You know, and that's sort of how I like to think of it, is you're actually like saving them from from the alternative, which is either they're going to go to another another vendor or another website because they can't find what they need, or they're just not going to trust you enough because they didn't get enough education from you through the buyer's journey. So, you know, if you can sort of mitigate that just by making sure that you have enough and that you're actually pointing them there at every stage, those are sort of the two ways that you can evolve your strategy a little bit more to support, you know, both ABM strategies, but also, you know, of course, the ultimate goal of selling them something.
You must have some little ones where the floor is always lava, because I know that's what my little ones do.
I actually don't, but I love that game idea. It's just like a great visualization for thinking about that, because, you know, look, B2B marketing is not life or death. It's never going to be life or death. But the stakes are high for your customers and your buyers. And if you don't help them, you know, you really have to believe that there are going to be some negative consequences. So I just find the floor is lava game as a content strategy is just a great way to think about that. And of course, it's never going to be quite that bad. But, you know, your customer who you really want to help might not get that promotion, or they might not get that revenue that you promised you were going to generate for them, and those sorts of things. So, you know, you really are helping them not hurt themselves by keeping them up on those little stones.
Where do you see the gaping holes? And before I let you answer that question, I'm going to put in some of my own insights. A lot of the gaping holes is there's no content to really support the selling conversations that salespeople usually have live. And what I mean about it is, we're not reframing people's thoughts and ideas, creating that real buying vision, or challenging the targets, letting them think about where gaps may lie in their organization, where the personal impacts are. So that's where I see a lot of that reframing, talking about account-specific gaps, but also where the competitor-specific gaps. So I'm teaching for differentiation. And when I say teaching for differentiation, it means I'm not making the claim we are different in this way. It's I have the stories that show how you uniquely fill the gaps, so the prospects come to their own conclusions about your differentiation. That's where I see is missing. Because as you said, yeah, everything is top of the funnel. I'm not having that differentiation. I'm not seeing the account-specific gaps and impacts. So it's basically I'm tying predefined needs and wants to features and capabilities, which then it becomes a price-based decision because I'm now comparing your features with other people, with your competitors' features.
Yeah.
There is none of that creating a buying vision. Where do you see some of those gaping gaps?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, there are different ways to label that, but it could be you know, super broadly the middle of the funnel, where like I said, a lot of companies are great at that top of funnel, and they probably have some good product marketing that tells people how the features and functions of their product or solution or service actually works. But there's nothing in between to tell people how to build their strategy and to address the key objections that do come up in the buying cycle. And if we all agree that you know, people are engaging with salespeople a little bit less these days than they were in the past, and they are finding their own information through content, then like, let's create content that actually supports that. And so when they do get to the salesperson, they're ready to go, and they're more looking for a partner to move through like their procurement process, or to address those key technical challenges, or make sure that things are going to work. So yeah, I think it's sort of like, okay, I know I have a problem, and that is sort of what is covered in the top of the funnel. How do I actually solve that problem strategically? And, you know, that is usually in the absence of a specific product or service. You're not necessarily talking about what you do at your company. You're just talking about, these are the best practices for this generally, and some ways you can address this. And yes, our solution is one of those, but it's not necessarily the only one here, you know. And you know, you might then get into some competitive intel. You might get into you know, other objection-based content, but like, really what you're doing is you're selling them the value of whatever it is you're offering. So that by the time that they get to the point of like, how much does this thing cost? They already believe that it's valuable and that it can help them. And I think a lot of people don't have that sort of like really meaty middle part. And it's because it's hard. It's a lot harder than the brand stuff and harder than the product marketing. You really have to think through the strategy of how are all of these different potential customers going to actually use us, and learn from the best practices of your most successful customers and bring those out in content. So if you're an earlier stage business, that can be tough because you may not have all that stuff figured out. You know, like we, even for us, we launched a new product this summer and we have a ton of work to do to fill that middle of funnel gap, because we do have sort of some high level thought leadership, we have some product marketing, but we really need to develop that middle best practice and sell the value of what it is that's sort of unique about our version of this product, because it is fairly competitive. And that just takes time and resources to actually build up. So I think it's easy to be overwhelmed and frustrated that you don't already have all of those things, but you kind of just have to, like, number one, listen to your sales team and figure out what are they hearing and what are the questions they're answering most often. That's kind of a waste of their time. Like, the people should really be sold on this by the time they get to the salesperson. And then, you know, what are your customers struggling with once they actually become customers? And I think this is one thing that marketers really overlook, is they only focus on the sales side and they don't look ahead to how prepared are our customers to be good customers once they actually sign. Do they have the strategy figured out? And of course, there's a role for that in the sales process and like mutual action plans and things like that. But, you know, I think there's also a role for marketing to share those strategies and those best practices so that as customers are encountering all of this content, they can sort of start formulating their own version of what that best practice plan is and apply it to the way they do things with their own organization. That's one way to think about it for sure.
I like how you said how you're focusing on the unique value that your solution is also going to provide, because that's where it misses a lot of times. We have thought leadership, but a lot of times companies miss the commercial insight, which is, what is the value? How are you going to uniquely fill a gap? What is the impacts of the approaches that are being used today by your accounts, your target accounts, and also your competitors? Where are the gaps in their technology, the solution? How are they not filling the problems that prospects are facing? And then you show how you uniquely fill it. That is where I see a lot is missing, is that commercial insight. Because thought leadership, I can educate you, but you can take that information and try to apply it internally. You can go to my competitors and start asking about it. But what we need to do is start to share and show why you. And that's where I think is another big piece, another gaping hole in that buying journey that need to be filled. How does content need to evolve to support ABM and sales?
I think we already covered that question.
Except I won't even go beyond it, because we did cover that on the content side. Mm-hmm. But how do we use it on a personalization? How do we make it more personalized? And then I want to think of how now we go beyond the personalization, because you have the micro elements that you can get at Path Factory, but now how do we get it to become more personal?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's really hard to do. As marketers, we've really been focused on sort of the macro level personalization. So you go to an account and something like demand base is saying, you know, hey, Path Factory, how's it going? And, you know, we know what account you're from. Or, you know, you're doing some A/B testing using a tool like Optimizely or something to try to personalize things a little bit more to see what will convert better. And that's great. You know, you might even go as far as, you know, using Adobe or other products to change elements of your website or your emails to make it a little bit better. And like, that's cool, but it's all sort of human powered based on rules. And it's not super responsive to where the person actually is in their buyer's journey. And so, you know, this idea that content is data is a really big one that I'm really passionate about right now. You know, the idea that it's not just these piles of PDFs or whatever sitting in a library somewhere, like these are actually pieces of data that can be analyzed and understood to figure out what they're about and how they kind of fit in the buyer's journey based on what they're about. And then, you know, using the content consumption data as well to kind of marry those two things together. And in real time, figure out what has someone already looked at? What are the assets that other people in their accounts are looking at? What's kind of trending in this industry or vertical based on what we know about them, and bringing in many different data sources, not just, you know, and part of what I'm talking about is what PathFactory can do, but part of it is, can you bring in data from like a Sixth Sense to identify, yes, the accounts, but maybe other information about them? Can you bring in data from your marketing automation platform and append that to make it really interesting for people? Not all of that is possible today. It's sort of like a pie in the sky dream of where we want to go. But I'm really excited about the idea that in the same way that like Amazon knows everything about you, both based on like your past purchases, but also what other people like you in your geography, we can sort of apply some of those same principles to B2B and make it not just the sort of like macro personalizations, but truly micro personalized for the individual, their account, their role, where they are in the buyer's journey, and that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited about the idea of like using that content intelligence data to do that stuff in combination with other types of data eventually. Yes.
Yep. And what I say is even go beyond the micro personalization of, because I have all the intent data. You have Bombora, you have Sixth Sense, you mentioned PathFactory. I can see what they're consuming, what they're searching for. And what usually starts to happen is they start to create these campaigns. I've grouped these different accounts together based on the consumption and searching and what they're searching for, where they are on the buying journey. But I miss that personal relevance aspect of it, of why are they searching? What is going on within that organization? What's going on within that, those people? So that's where I say, if they keep engaging, yeah, micro-personalization it all the way. And you need to have a funnel that way where they can go on their own. But then we also need a more personal account-based approach where you take all that data, as you said, content is data, what they're searching for, and now figure out why. What is going on? What are they not considering? What are their gaps in their impacts? And now I take a more of one-to-one approach where now it's not campaigned, but I'm on social, email, live conversations, and it's a one-to-one for those very specific accounts that can give you the growth. So that's where I see as the next level of ABM is I take that micro-personalization and then understand why are we doing something? Why are they doing something? Why are they clicking? Why are they reading this? What is going on? What is the reason behind their intention? Because once you understand that, then you can start sharing things that they haven't considered before.
Definitely. Yeah. The idea of sort of the omni-channel ABM strategy that is pretty hard to execute today, even if you hack together a decent ABM tech stack, and then understanding not just their intent to buy, but what is the intent behind the actions that they're taking, which would be really interesting for sure.
And it's why companies go to personalabm.com. How can we be leveraging content to fuel the B2B customer journey? What is the additional insights do you have there and how we could be leveraging it? What are your final thoughts here?
Yeah. I think most marketers tend to think of content as a pre-sales tool to get people to the finish line. And then when they're done and they're off to, the world of support portals and that sort of thing. And I think that is totally the wrong way to think about it, because unless you're 100% a totally one product or one solution company, you probably have more things to sell your customers, and you probably need them to become better educated, even though they've already signed with you, in order to get the most out of your solution. And this is just, it's somewhat specific to the SaaS industry, but even if you're a service industry, a service company, you probably have lots more things that you need your customers to take advantage of or to know about. And I don't think that we're very good at bringing those kind of demand gen principles to the customer journey yet. In B2B, we tend to just sort of like throw people over the fence. So the idea that, yes, you should be delivering as much content as possible, again, at all different stages of a buyer's journey, on the customer side, to nurture them towards adoption, nurture them towards renewal, nurture them towards advocacy, nurture them towards upsell and cross-sell within their account. All of those things, should be thought about as strategically as nurturing someone towards buying for the first time. And I think aside from, you know, some of the most sophisticated, maybe enterprise ABM teams, very few people are thinking about that, or customer marketing teams, very few people are thinking about that. So that's one thing. And then, you know, again, paying attention to the engagement with all of that stuff. So, you know, if they're a customer of one product, but they've just started, you know, binging on a ton of content about another topic that you offer, that's a really great time to send an alert to the CSM or the account executive or the account manager to say, hey, this account is looking at all this great content on this topic. They're not a customer of that. Why don't you reach out to them and have a conversation and sort of set up a demo or something? So, you know, bringing again those great sales and demand gen principles to the customer side of the house is extremely powerful and important, more important than ever in a year when, you know, I think most companies are trying to not just retain, but expand their existing customer base, because it's a more efficient way to grow their business. And I see that continuing into 2021 as well. So just making sure that, you know, you are examining the customer journey and not just from a, do they know how to use our product, or, you know, do they know how to reach us kind of scenario, but are they actually going to become a good customer and advocate and expand and grow with us over the long term? And can we nurture them toward that a bit more deliberately than we're doing today, using content and the engagement data that comes out of that interaction between the customers and the content?
Yep. I like that you use the word deliberate, because yeah, there is little intention. I also see it many times, actually studies even show this, that the customer acquisition, the customer retention, and the customer expansion conversations by both sales and marketing are undifferentiated. It's the same conversation, no matter where I am, who I am, whether I'm an existing customer or a prospect, it's the same type of conversation. Mm-hmm. People after the sale, account management and success, customer success teams, they're talking about activities filled and here are my benefits versus here were the gaps we filled. Here's your impacts, not benefits, but actual impacts at the company, the division, the rank, the personal levels, the customer levels. And then here's where the growth opportunities are for you. Here's where we still need to make changes and shift. Here's what we need to do next, because it's those strategic conversations that could be initiated with content through the right case studies, not the basic challenge. Here's what we did and here's results, but actual story type of case studies that show also what can be the next step as well. I could drive that engagement with the VPs, but it is, I think that's missing. And that's why a lot of customer success teams engage at the manager level and then at the director level, they can't get the VPs. And then we wonder why there's churn or we can't expand within the accounts. We don't have that intention. We don't have that deliberate content that is designed to drive expansion. So thank you for bringing that out.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's we've probably overinvested in content on the front end and underinvested on the other side. And so we're missing a lot of those key pieces, especially for the people who aren't the day-to-day users, as you say, the people who are more of the decision makers and who stay out of the way until there's a problem or until their business is struggling with, you know, maybe a challenge like a pandemic where their revenue is dropped and they're scrutinizing everything. But you really need to nurture those people and sell them again and again and again and make sure that you're not caught off guard. And some of our customers even use content engagement data as a way to predict churn. If, for example, you run an onboarding program and you notice that people from X account have engaged with nothing or have lower than average engagement with that content, that can be a good indicator that like they're not adopting fast enough, they're not getting the value that they need, and they're going to become a churn risk when the time comes. But if you're not paying attention to those signals, then you might be caught off guard because you're just like, oh, they signed, they're logged in, they're good to go. But if they don't actually know what they're doing, that can be a big challenge for you.
Yep. Perfect. Well, Cassandra, I want to thank you for joining me on today's podcast. I know we'll be having you on future Reboot Friday panels where we bring together CMOs, CROs, VPs, and directors of sales and marketing to discuss shifts that should be made to drive a rebound. Christine, I know we'll be reaching out to you on that shortly. And in the meantime, for our listeners, go to stopthesalesdrop.com/Friday reboot, where you will see that we have Ardith Alvey and the VP of Content Marketing at Content Marketing Institute for an upcoming panel. Thank
that
you again,
like
Cassandra.
Yeah. Thanks. It's my pleasure. It was a great conversation. I'm always happy to nerd out about content and B2B marketing.
Thank you very much.